or tell you stories to teach you to be careful around white people?
I didn't ever have that experience because it was very cordial. My people were with the white people were with us. So they didn't ever tell us the white man was an evil person.
How about, were lynchings unheard of in this area, or did you remember hearing them, anything about those?
Well, I remember we lived near Stars, South Carolina, just below Anderson. It was a lynching down there. I was quite young, and that upset the people to a certain extent. And it was a lynching here in this county, the last lynching, I understand, in South Carolina, was here in this county. Mr. Green, I believe. And that upset things that much. And I haven't heard tell of any more lynchings. That must have been 1931, I believe.
How were black people treated by the law when you were young or when your parents were young? With any difference with the way the law
treated
you?
Well, I think in some cases there were some difference there. If you were black, you didn't get the same type of treatments as if you were white. But I noticed one thing, you know, in my early days, that the wealthy white folk, the big plantations, owned the big plantations, seemed to have more respect for the colored race than it did poor white people.
How did married couples in your family treat each other? Was one person the boss, or were the relationships even? How about in your own grandparents or parents?
Well, during that age or period, I think the men felt that they were head of the home. And that worked very well at that time, but it's a big difference now.
Do you remember your older relatives ever talking about colored women having relationships with white men?
No, I didn't know much about that or think nothing about that much until I got to be about 18 or 20 years old.
Do you know how they felt about this, or did they ever say?
I never did hear too much discussion about that in my home when I was coming up. So they just accepted it.
Were you ever aware of any people who passed for white?
Oh, yes, several.
Any friends of yours?
Yes.
Men, women?
Men
both?
And women.
Both?
Right. Yeah, they had enough white blood to pass for white. And, of course, they got all the graces that the white folk got until they found out better.
What would happen when they found out?
Well, they kind of pushed them aside, and sometimes they didn't. I was in the last Confederate meeting in Charlotte, North Carolina. Charlotte, North Carolina. And I found that a lot of white folks recognized those colored slaves who had been colored slaves more than they did their own race when come to eat them.
They liked them better? I mean, they did
they
more
gave
things
them,
with
that's
them.
Right. They gave them an opportunity to eat first. Right there in that big, I guess it was called...
There was some fondness.
Convention.
Some fondness and closeness.
Oh, yeah. Very close. Very close. Because I was waiting tables, and they tell me to wait on those ex-slaves or those colored folks first. And then they were saved. Right there in Charlotte, North Carolina. Mm.
Well, about when was that?
That was about 1928.
Mm. How were Indians or people with some Indian blood treated, or did you know any?
I didn't know, because some of my folk had Indian blood in them, my grandmother.
Oh, what, Cherokee?
Cherokee. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know much about the Indian race when in Warren County in 1942. We had an Indian school. And, of course, they felt superior to blacks.
Well, the Indians did.
Yes, ma'am. And they told the superintendent of education, don't send them no black person down there to teach school.
When was this?
Pardon me. I didn't mean to cut that
No,
off.
You didn't do anything. Go ahead.
You got something to move?
It's just the hand.
Okay.
When was this?
All right. Well, I went to North Carolina in 1940.
And that's when the Indians said that?
And that's when I learned about the Indians. And they didn't count their darker brothers and sisters. That one group, the Halawars, you call them. They felt superior to their brothers and sisters that were dark. And that's still in existence now.
They prefer to have white
that's
blood?
Right. That's right.
When you were young, how often did you go to Greenville or Anderson for trips?
Oh, I went to Anderson, you know, several times a year with my dad.
Was this for shopping or what?
It was shopping and what have you.
Can you think of anything, any other reasons that you went other than shopping?
No, I can't.
What opportunities for colored people were available in Greenville or Anderson that you couldn't find in Calhoun or Seneca or Pendleton?
Well, I think one thing, they had better home houses in cities at that time.
Had better what?
Houses.
Houses.
Homes.
Homes.
That's right. In the cities than we had in the rural.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about the same now.
Was the shopping better there, too?
No, I think the shopping was about the same in Anderson or Belton or Greenville. I ain't seen the difference there.
Were there any better jobs there?
Oh, yeah, they had some better jobs.
What kinds of celebrations were held in black communities?
Well, they had the church services, the conventions, the associations, and matters of what kind, and also Masonic, KFPs. That was a colored organization. It's gone out of existence. It's something similar to the Masons.
Were parades, did you have parades and what kind?
Not in my younger days. We got in those by the time I was finishing high school.
What about holidays? Which holidays were the popular ones or important ones?
I think 4th of July was a holiday that we all look forward to and observe. And Emancipation Day was a day that we always observe. We still observe it now, but it's not thought of as much as it was back then. It was close to slavery.
Right. What day is that?
That's New Year's Day.
Oh, I didn't
know. We always have meetings, you know, for that. And give celebration to the time that we were set free and so forth. We still go along with that, most places.
Did you have any special ways of celebrating Christmas?
Oh, yes, we had our holidays for Christmas, and sometimes they last 4 or 5 days. We look forward to that, Santa Claus.
You do a lot. What does Santa Claus bring?
Oh, you know, apples and oranges and sometimes clothes. They hang up a sock and they fill it full of goodies and so forth. I think I found out about Santa Claus when I was about 7 years old when I caught my granddaddy bringing something.
How about birthdays and anniversaries? Are those especially? Were
celebrated
back when you were little?
That's right.
Did when you gave gifts, did the family members make their own gifts or buy gifts? Or what kind of gifts did they give?
Well, sometimes they give a gold watch. Or,
wow.
Pictures or something like that.
What were your mother's most prized possessions, do you remember, or your father's?
I mean, habits?
Things that they owned.
Oh.
Jewelry or furniture, was there any prized possession, something they particularly liked or loved? Even a pet.
Yes, we had several pet cats and dogs, which all of our old. But I think my mother was the number one housekeeper. She could sew, do needed work, and she loved cooking. of all the neighbors and so forth. And we'd meet on Sundays, just go around different houses and spend a lot of time. Some we don't have time to do now, or we don't take time. And my father loved the farm. He was a good farmer. And very industrious man. He taught us all how to work and how to respect people. I got that in the home more than I got in school.
Which adult did you most admire when you were a child and why?
Well, I always thought I was about equally in love with my mother and father. But my granddaddy used to buy all my clothes until I was about 8 years old. And always give me candy, cookies or something. So I'd like to go to his home for that.
Well, that answer, I was going to say which one you like most, and that sort of answered that. So did you admire and like him the most, too? Who did you like
most? I think about equal.
About equal? You admired him, liked
him? My grandfather, my grandmother, and of course my mother and father. I stuck with them. They stuck with me, and I stuck with them. I was kind of sickly when I came up. Had pneumonia 4 times.
You had pneumonia 4 times?
That's right. And so they did a lot of praying and working with me.
What are some of your happiest childhood moments?
Well, I believe Christmas time was my happiest time when I'm getting some extra and taking me somewhere I've never been.
A special visit was your happiest moment?
That's right.
When you were a child, how did you feel about being black? Did you have any feelings about being colored?
No, I just thought that was intended from beginning that to have white and colored people, and it didn't overwhelm me. I just thought it was like God wanted me to be, and I accepted it.
And so the next question, how did you feel about whites, would be the same answer, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
If you could have changed one thing about your life, what would it be?
I think I would get more education. And I think that would change a whole lot.
In spite of the fact that you went through your master's?
That's right.
You wish you'd had a doctorate degree, too?
Oh, yeah. I have an honorary doctorate.
Gotcha.
But I think if my schooling days had been a little better, take my early school days for 4 months, and I think I lost something. And I think if I'd have been going to an 8 or 9 month school, that I would have learned more. My opportunities would have been good. And I've always felt that if I were better educated, I'd have a better job. Could have got a better job. That's just been in me now. But I did the best I could with what I had.
You certainly did. When was the New Hope Church founded, the one your grandfathers founded?
I don't know the exact date when the church was founded, but it was sometime shortly after the Civil War.
What happened to the records?
The records were burned in the church.
You told me about the minister who baptized and married your parents. Could you tell me his name again?
Yeah, it was Dr. Harrison Watkins. We always knew him as Dr. H. Watkins. Quite brilliant man. He was ordained shortly after the Civil War.
Can you tell me any more about him?
Yes. He pastored several churches in South Carolina and Georgia, and he was the first secretary to the South Carolina convention.
I remembered you said the Cox family helped your grandparents start their farm. Can you tell me more about that?
Yes, the Cox family and the Washington family was very close, even today, up to the date. And to borrow money, they would always go to Cox's. The Cox's would help them. They helped them build a new home. So it was good relations, good relations. Even today, when one of us die, some of the cops are going to be at the funeral.
Coxes will come to the funeral of a Washington.
That's right.
Are there many Coxes still around?
Yeah, a lot of them in Belton, South Carolina. And they were quite rich people.
You also talked about the quilts being a community service. Were these made to be sold to earn money for the community?
Oh, yes. They would sell them, and they always kept putting them for themselves. That's about all the way they could heat the beds, is that the quilts they made.
Did the women make their own patterns? Do you know any of the patterns? Did they make them up themselves?
As far as I know, they made their own patterns.
Do you know of any favorite patterns?
No, I don't know.
What was the name of the cousin that you said made a lot of furniture?
Well, he's Holloway. He's first cousin of mine.
And your sisters married preachers. Where did they preach?
Well, one pastored in Greenville 26 years. Reverend McNeil, my baby sister's husband, pastored in North Carolina and also in Greenville, South Carolina. He was at one church there for 26 and a half years.
Where did your uncles preach?
My uncle preached in Greenville County, Uncle Henry Green. Henry Green. And then I had two uncles that left the South. One pastor in Chicago a number of years. And one pastor in Cincinnati a number of years. In fact, until he got disabled and passed.
What were the names of your sisters' preacher husbands?
Name of my sisters?
Yeah, their husbands' names, the preachers.
Oh, Reverend McNeil, A.M. McNeil, married my baby sister, Miss Inez. And Reverend J.C. Arnold, H.O.N.O.R., married one of my sisters, and they lived in Chester, South Carolina. And he pastored one church 50 years.
And what was Dr. Latimer's full name, the friend of your father's who went to college?
Dr. John Latimer.
And who was the friend you knew of who went to college? And you said some cousins did.
Oh, Mrs. Lagerson.
You were telling me about your cousin who went to college. What was his name?
Oh. This is Lambert.
Lambert L. Sloan?
That's right.
Lambert L. Sloan, it says on the pamphlet.
That's right.
And
it was four of those children, and all of them went to college, but he liked one. He finished at Shaw University. And then his older brother finished like 1 year. No, like 1 month finished Chicago. He just got too lazy to go. His two sisters finished. And they taught school for a number of years. They retired. One of them earned a PhD degree. That's about all.
Mr. Washington, are there any more stories that you could add about your family or about the Seneca Institute that you'd like to tell us?
Well, I'd like to add a few things more about Seneca Institute as being the number one school in this part of South Carolina, upper part of South Carolina, because we had students to come here from practically more than half of the state and out of Georgia, and some out of Florida and Alabama, to my knowledge. And the school could have lasted for a number of years if our people had been wise enough to accept some of the older ministers, ideas. I know a man that was president, minister, Reverend T.A. Gideon, was a faithful believer in education. He educated most of his children. And he worked with the state of South Carolina, and they would have built buildings out there for taking care of, 1,000 students or more but they didn't listen to him. And of course, the school soon was closed. Now,
when was that, in the 40s?
That was in the 40s. I don't remember the exact date. I can find it for you sometime. And as to my family, we came here solely because of Seneca Institute. My father and mother wanted to be close enough to school that we could go to school in the daytime and be home at night. And of course, we were fortunate enough, all of us, all five of us, fortunate enough to finish Seneca Institute. And that's our pride and joy. But it seemed like that people got jealous of my family because my family was instrumental in getting the first state-supported high school in this county for colored people. And he had the support of the better people here in this county. But some of the officials of the school felt that Daddy worked against Seneca Institute. And that's been a soul that has come down through the ages. And I don't know who we'll get rid of. Because I've had to face the same thing. I came back home from North Carolina in 1972. And of course, they said nobody could stay out of the state of South Carolina 40 years and come back and be their leader. So that was a great handicap for me in my work. And spiritually, I was sent back here by the Spirit of God. Because I was offered a job in Virginia, a church. And I told my wife's pastor up there, Dr. Moody, that I'd pray over it, because he offered, told me about the church. And the church said anybody he sent there, they would call. But after praying from October to January 7th, 1972, it was revealed to me in a dream. And this dream told me a light would rise in my bedroom, and the light would make three moves. It would come near my face, and then it would go whatever direction went, that's where I should go. If it went north, go take the church. If I went south, for me to come back home. So the next morning at the breakfast table, I told my wife, I said, well, I got my directions. I'm going back home. So, and I began to tell her about the light. She said, I saw that light. So I wrote Mr. Cunningham, who lived in this house, that I would be coming home sometime in June.
And how long have you lived in this house?
I lived here since 1972. That's when we retired, came here. And so when I came here, that's when they said that nobody could stay away from here 40 years and be their leader. Mm-hmm. And they put out all kind of propaganda, lies and so forth. And as a result, I'm in a lawsuit now regarding the property line.
Regarding this property?
Yeah, regarding this property. Mm. With the trustees and the churches. And I don't know when it will resolve.
Are you still a minister?
I'm still a minister. Mm. Associate minister down at the Ebenezer. But I don't get much work to do. See, for somebody to stand up in a meeting with 400 people and say that my house was built right where the boys' dormitory used to be, and that when I die, I should give them this land back. So, and those people believe that. And it's a very serious type thing. And I've been trying to resolve it for 17 years. So I blocked the road out there about a month ago now. And that gave them chance to fight it. Rather than come to me, they went and sued me. And then that gave me an opportunity to sue them. I didn't want to sue them first, because my attorney said it's better for them to sue me than it was for me to sue them. So I caught them in a trap. they sued me, then I sued them. So, and we hope that that soon will resolve itself.
How many children do you have, Mr. Washington?
I just got that one son. And I'm trying to wind up my estate, my will, and that process. If I don't think the Lord is going to let me stay here many more years. I'm 82 years old now.
82, you'll be 83 when?
December the 30th, 1900. And this year, 1989.
You were mentioning a little bit about your wife's family. Can you tell me anything special that you remember? They were from North Carolina.
Yeah, my wife was a school teacher. She taught 43 years. And she finished a Presbyterian school in Oxford, North Carolina. And all her mother's folks were educated and successful farmers, something like we were. That's pretty good.
Her family were all educated in farming.
That's right. That's her cousin, adopted, attendance. He just passed recently.
Did you ever hear her say anything about their feelings about after the Civil War? Were any of them free, or were they all slaves before the Civil War?
His grandfather was nowhere in slavery. He was white.
This is Dr. Eugene Kennedy.
Yeah,
his grandfather was?
His daddy.
His daddy?
That's right.
Was a slave?
No, he never was a slave.
Oh, never was a slave.
Uh-huh.
Oh, how did that happen?
He was just about white.
Oh, he was just, uh-huh. Passable white.
But all his children got an education, every one of them. They're all gone now, except one daughter.
Hmm.
And she's about, I think she's about 90 years old. So all the property went to her.
Oh.
They just tried wealth, and wealth thought of her.
And
kind of like my family.
And your wife is no longer living?
No,
either.
That was her chick. That's her.
This is her.
Uh-huh.
1986, she passed
that's
away.
Right.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Washington.
We lived together for 53 years, thank God.
53?
That's right.
Is there anything else you wanted to tell me about bygone days or bygone times?
Yes, I'd like to say briefly that my wife and I made up in our minds to try to work to get some money. Neither one of us had nothing. We got married. And we worked in Walhalla, South Carolina, and a very low salary. Our salary was all over the country was pulled in for teachers. But we would put into the bank here in Seneca $2.50 every month. And we were out of school 15 years before we saved $1,000. But after I became a principal in Wise, North Carolina, that kind of gave us a little opportunity to save more. And we would help a lot of people, young people in school. And I'm supporting Morris College. I didn't attend Morris, but we have a scholarship fund there, $5,000. And I've given thousands of dollars to Johnson C. Smith University. And given several hundred dollars to Shaw University, Shaw Divinity School. And we also are supporting Wayne State University in Detroit, Michigan, with our life. And we're trying to leave a little something for our son.
Looking around this room, I see a lot of plaques and memorabilia. Do you have many things from Seneca State Institute? You have that one picture of your graduating class.
Yes. Well, you could cut that off.
What is the picture on the wall? Is that a Seneca Junior College graduation picture?
That's right. That's when I finished high school, 1927.
How many people were in that class?
40.
And on the other side, I see a Seneca Junior College diploma. Is that the same year?
1927.
Oh, that was... That was the next year?
When I finished high school.
Oh.
That's right.
I thought you said you finished in 26.
No, 27.
27 when you finished.
That's right. High school.
High school.
That's right.
You were telling me that after you retired, you began to go back. You had gone to divinity school before. You went back to divinity school. How old were you then?
I was 65 when I went back.
Which school?
Shaw University, Raleigh, North Carolina. That's the oldest theological black school in the world, to our knowledge.
And at the age of 65, you attended again. Did you? Which degree did you receive?
I got the master's degree in the divinity school.
Okay. Tell me who W.H. Mills is and what you and he did together.
Dr. W.H. Mills, instructor, the late Dr. W.H. Mills, was an instructor at Clemson College, the chairman of the Board of Education in Oconee County. And he, along with several more distinguished people here in Seneca, white and colored, organized the first known interracial committee in South Carolina.